Hi, I'm Mariah.
I'm Lauren.
And this is the Miseducation of Lauren and Mariah. Wow, friends, this is our first podcast. I'm quite psyched, not gonna lie.
I'm very psyched as well.
So you guys can get to know us. Lauren and I thought it would be fun if we introduced each other. Lauren, do you want to start?
Okay. Okay, so this is Mariah Johnson. She is from Washington State, but now she's from Tennessee.
Wow.
Tennessee girl. She looks like she's from Tennessee.
That's really disrespectful. I don't look like I'm from Tennessee. Even though there's nothing wrong if you're from Tennessee and you look like it, I just don't look like that.
Anyway, she's a sophomore in the college, American Studies major, psych minor, icon, legend. She has a lot of power. And she also is very involved on campus. She's on the Blue and Gray board. She's a Y-Lead coordinator, which is where we met.
Kinder.
And yes.
Wonderful. Thanks, Lauren. So, hi, everyone. This is Lauren. Lauren Reynolds. She is from Elkridge, Maryland, even though she decided to go for, like, an obscene amount of time with telling everybody she was from Columbia, Maryland, even though they're, like, practically the same place, so I don't really know why she cared. But Lauren's also an incredible person. She is a sophomore in the college, double majoring in government and African American studies with a minor in Spanish. She's really good at Spanish. Ask her anything. Also, Lauren is super heartwarming. She's a really great friend. She is one of the co-chairs of LEAD, which is Leaders in Education About Diversity. And she also really stands Wendy Williams. So
I really do. Wait, okay, she's my problematic fave.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay, wait, but we have to reconsider after our Kelly incidents. But anyway, yeah. We will see. It's fine.
That is something we will come back to during this podcast, is problematic faves.
Yeah. So this podcast is basically going to be us talking about Black women's issues, or just, like, Blackness in general, but it's from the perspective of two Black women, so it'll tend to have a focus. You feel?
Yeah, I do feel. So for our first episode of this lovely podcast, we decided to kind of flashback to a conversation that we had in the lovely Lounger Library about our decision to go to a PWI versus an HBCU. Also noting our general viewership and the fact that this is Georgetown, some definitions. So PWI is a predominantly white institution, and HBCU is a historically Black college or university. So, Lauren, why do you think you chose to go to a PWI over an HBCU?
All right. Before we start, I just wanted to make a note. We also recognize that this is a little biased, considering it's coming from two. It's not a true, like, PWI versus HBCU debate, because it's from two Black women who did choose to go to a PWI. But as far as why I did, I don't know. I think it's interesting because I only applied to one HBCU, and it never was something that I questioned that much. And so, did you apply to any?
Mm-mm, I didn't apply to any.
Yeah, I applied to Hampton, which is in North Carolina. And I think why I only applied to one is because I knew that I didn't want to go to one necessarily. But I think it was more so I applied. I think that I wanted to go to a PWI because I just kind of always figured that I would, and I think that that's interesting, that I felt like that was a given, considering, yeah, I didn't go to a white school at all.
And do you think you just wanted to go to a PWI because you thought there would be, like, certain experiences that you could only get there that would prove to be vital to you?
Yes. I suppose. Why do you think you went to a PWI?
Okay, so you bring up a good point in the fact that I didn't apply for any HBCUs, primarily because I wasn't really encouraged to apply to HBCUs.
Yeah.
My family kind of had this whole idea of, while HBCUs are great and they're something that throughout the Black community, like, we hear as great universities, and I would say largely the white community also thinks of a lot of HBCUs as really great schools. Like, for instance, Howard has a really great reputation, and so does Spelman and Morehouse. But I was always kind of taught that the world is white for the most part in the United States, so you might as well get used to that earlier rather than later. And I think that was why I was encouraged to go to a PWI, because that would give me the experience of dealing more directly with white people prior to getting out into the workforce. And I think they almost thought that being at an HBCU would just, like, shelter me from a different experience. So it almost was never an option. Like, when I talked about applying for colleges, like, it didn't ever even come up. And I kind of sometimes wish that I at least even gave it more consideration, just because I think it would have been a different experience that would have been probably just as great as the one I'm having now.
No, yeah, I agree with that. Like, as you were talking, I was kind of, like, reflecting, and I was like, I don't think it was so much that I didn't want to go to one. It was more so that I never really was presented with that as real options in the sense that it was, like, they were listed off. And I think it's very interesting now thinking about it because, like, my stepmom went to a HBCU, and a lot of, like, family members that I have did. But for some reason, that was never something that my parents encouraged for me, and I do wish that they had in a way, because I think that had I actually considered it as an option and did, like, fair research, that I could see myself going to one in a way.
Yeah.
Because I think that there is a value in that experience. But I also think that for me, like, because I went to a school that was, like, minority majority, I think coming to a PWI was, like, that was a valuable experience for me. It's almost like the vice versa. Yeah. Of that, I think that a lot of people go to HCUs to seek that community with other Black people, whereas I felt like I kind of had already grown up around minorities. So for me, it was more of a culture shock to come here.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That does make a lot of sense.
And I feel like I grew, not more, because I think I could have grown there as well in a very different way. But I think that this school provided me with exposure that I perhaps wouldn't have gotten elsewhere.
Yeah. No, I definitely feel the same way. And I kind of come from a different background in the fact that I went to a school where I was largely the minority. I think there were 50 Black students in a school of 2,000. So I was very used to being in the minority. And I thought that coming to Georgetown, it would kind of be like a similar experience. And in a lot of ways, that's been true. But even still, I've been able to grow. And I almost wonder if I went to, like, for instance, Howard is always the one in my mind, and I think that's because it's so close. And I wonder if I went to Howard, like, would I have been able to handle the almost culture shock of that, if that makes sense. But also, there's so many times that, like, while I'm here, and I love Georgetown, like, I truly do. I wonder. Thanks. But I wonder what it will be, like, what it would be like to go there and not have to worry about so many of the things that I worry about here in terms of feeling, like, essentialized when it comes to professors, or feeling like our community is so small, and, like, what does that mean? And it's a weird thing because it's something I'll dream about, but I'll never really know, you know?
Yeah. I think you bring up a good point as far as I think going to a PWI, it also makes obviously makes the Black community here smaller, but then that limits the, I guess, like, presentation of Blackness, and we've, like, talked about that before as well. And I think that that's, like, a common sentiment that I've felt, or that I've heard from, like, people around campus, like, feeling like the Black community can be, like, kind of limited at a PWI, just period. And so if you feel as though you don't fit in with that group, then you're just, like, almost, like, thrown out in a way, whereas I feel like that wouldn't be true if you went to an HBCU, because since everyone would be Black, there's no one presentation of Blackness or what it means to be Black, and there's no, like, pressure to, like, not behave in a certain way, because I don't think that the Black community behaves in a certain way, or more so be a certain way or present in a certain way. Yeah. There we go. So I think that that's something that I wonder about a lot, too, because I think that, I mean, obviously, you would feel more connected to the Black community if you go to an HBCU, I guess. I guess I shouldn't think of that as a given, necessarily. But I think that it also would have a more endless potential for what it means to be Black and for Blackness in general. And I wonder about that a lot as well.
Yeah. And I think the thing here, too, and it's important to note for our wonderful listeners, that I think the Georgetown community and its Black community is not explicit and trying to perpetuate this idea that there's, like, one idea of Blackness that's preferred, or, like, one idea that will make you more fit in with the group. But I think just, like, thinking about admissions, sometimes it almost feels like Georgetown takes one, or doesn't take, I don't know if I like the meaning of this, but is more likely to admit Black students of a similar back, like of one type of background than of other types of backgrounds. Like, for instance, maybe it's just me, but I haven't met a ton of Black students, and it might just be because there aren't a ton of Black students from Washington State, rural Washington State, if I might add. But I haven't met a ton of Black students with my experience, which also then is just a default since there's only like 400 Black students, period, if none of them are having that similar experience of as me, especially when you're in freshman year and you're trying to meet people and make friends, and so much of that is built on like having a common experience, then I almost felt isolated from the beginning, if that makes sense.
Right.
Okay. Something I was thinking about a lot today is that I always weigh this out in my mind when I'm like complaining about wishing I went to an HBCU versus like being here at Georgetown, but I never really articulate like what are the specifics of that. Like, for you, are there specifics about Georgetown that you wish were different, or like what are the things that when you think about Howard that you wish you had, or like wish you had it if you went there?
I guess just like less tokenization in general. Like, I wish that, I mean, I guess the experience that I would wish for at an HBCU would just be not being like the only Black person that you feel like you have to speak for the entire community, like mm-hmm. in your classes, etc. And so I think that in that way, as far as like being in a classroom, because I think that that has a lot of like I think I internalize a lot of that, and mm-hmm. I think that it becomes like a challenge for me, like especially in how I like perform in classrooms, like not like yeah. academically, but like literally performing, like how I behave in a classroom, mm-hmm. I think. And I think that that wouldn't be true if I went to an HBCU. But I also think that as far as like logistical things with like networking, etc., because I think there's like wonderful networking opportunities when you're in HBCU as well, which I guess are true at Georgetown as well. But I guess for me, when I think about that, it's like, okay, yes, I come to Georgetown so that I can leave and there's like the great like alumni network, etc.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I feel like othered on this campus, like I wonder how othered I'll feel from the alumni.
Ooh. Snaps for that. That's so true. Yeah, I've never thought about it that way before. But in general, that's such a good point, because a lot of times I don't feel like the whole of the Georgetown community is mine to partake in. And I can't even imagine reaching out to an alumni, because I've noticed this, like there's so many kids, especially in our year as sophomores, who are like reaching out to alumni so they can create their beautiful LinkedIn profiles and like have all of these great jobs. And I already feel isolated from my own community. So the idea of doing that right now
right.
kind of feels unfathomable, especially if it were not like a person who was like familiar with CMEA or like just a Black person in general, or a person of color. I think I would feel comfortable reaching out to like any person of color. But the idea of just reaching out to any Georgetown alumni without considering those factors feels really strange to me and uncomfortable.
Right.
On a more shallow note, what I really miss about not going to an HBCU is like, no offense to Georgetown parties, like
this is valid,
sometimes they're lit. We've had some great experiences.
I know, we had a great two nights, haven't we?
A great two nights. But imagine the international
the energy that would have
if we had a yard fest.
Mm.
Can you imagine if we had a yard fest? Like, that wow. would be wild. And I feel like I'm missing out on this, like, okay, so I have a cousin who went to North Carolina A&T, which is like known for having the greatest homecoming ever, and he was telling me about it, and he was like, yeah, it was just so lit. And he like goes back every year, even though he's like 35 and you would think he would have moved on with his life, but he's still killing it. But he goes back every year, and it's like this big part of his life, and it's really fun. And there's nothing about Georgetown in that way that I feel a tie to, like a big community event that I would consider coming back for and as alumni. Like, I guess that's homecoming, but like I don't think I'm gonna come back for homecoming. That's not a yard fest, you right. know, where there's like events and concerts and, like, I don't know, like, that's a big cultural event. And I can't imagine being a part of, like coming back because the Georgetown Alumni Association invited me to. Do you know what I mean? What, like, because it's something I already kind of feel isolated from. But I can't imagine making that effort to come back for that. Where, like, I think if I went to Howard, then I would for sure go to Yard Fest and come back, like, year after year. But that's also because it's, like, a Black event. Like, I knew about Yard Fest way before coming to D.C. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was a really big deal and something that I should have, like, wanted to go to and, like, strived to go to. But
see, I feel like while you're saying that, I feel like I wouldn't even be invited to the Alumni Association. Like, that's all that's, like, in my head. But then I'm, like, trying to think, like, while you're talking, I'm like, why do I think that? And I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, I don't, this is what I'm trying to figure out, I guess, and this is what I'm, like, still struggling with myself. Of, like, how much of this is just in my head, like, my, like, other,
ooh,
like,
child,
and how much of it is actually concrete, because I'm like, oh, I feel like I wouldn't be invited, and it's like, okay, like, valid, you might not be, but also, like, I feel like I think that because I'm like, oh, like, why would they care? But why, like, Georgetown doesn't, like, just say, like, screw you to every person who's, like, who's every Black student, but, like,
yeah,
but I feel like they do.
Mm-hmm.
Or, no, okay, scratch that. I don't feel like they do. I love DeJoya. Anyway, like, anyway. But, like, I mean, like, I think, because, okay, even that, I feel like I said that, but then I was like, no, I don't think that's real. I feel like I just feel that way. Because I think that Georgetown values, as far as, like, Georgetown, like, administration, I'm talking mm-hmm. about, like, the Black community, I think Georgetown values Black students, but only when they fit into their mold of what they think Black students should be.
Okay,
and so, and I think that differs a lot from what, I guess what the Black community may think that, like, Black Georgia students to be.
Mm.
But I also don't want to, like, I don't want to put too many, like, restraints on, like, what I think the Black community is at Georgetown. So I don't like thinking of that as, like, an entity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's
and,
smart.
And, like, making, like, assumptions about that, especially since we're a part of it.
Yeah.
Tea. Anyway.
We love it.
But I think that Georgetown values their Black students when they're fitting into their mold as far as, like, oh, like, they're Black students that still know how to conform to, like, not conform to, like, conform to, like, a Georgetown society, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that they're very evident about that. And I think that professors are more very evident about that. Like, they value, like, their Black students that, like, participate in class all the time and that, like, come to office hours and mm-hmm. that, like, do all these other things. And I think that a lot of professors don't acknowledge the fact that a reason why their students may not be participating in class, may not be coming to office hours, is because they feel othered in their own classrooms and are mm-hmm. afraid to speak. And I think that Georgetown doesn't really do the best at acknowledging that fact.
Yeah.
And time is back to our theme. I feel like that would be different at HBCU, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
I think so many of the classroom dynamics that we feel here would not be an issue in HBCU.
Yeah.
Especially this whole idea of me as a Black student being somehow put in charge of, and, like, this is an element of othering, but, like, being put in charge of teaching Blackness to not only my peers, but kind of my professors, too,
mm-hmm.
which I think is super uncomfortable. Like, I had an incident my freshman year in this one, like, English class where a student was trying to talk about whether or not, well, he felt like Georgetown was putting too much attention on race, and I really had, okay, so I usually pick my battles. I chose this battle, haha, and it was great, because he never said anything again. But then it put me in this weird position where I think everybody in the class was very aware of what he said leading to tension or, like, something to be resolved in terms of someone speaking for a, like, for a Black perspective. And my professor, who was a woman of color, was very, right?
We love that.
Was very unwilling to take up that space and correct him, or not correct him, but address that question, because I guess he didn't need to be corrected. So then it was on me to have to fix that situation. And I didn't have to. But if you've been in that situation, you know it feels like you have to. Mm-hmm. And while I was fine to do that in that space and do it that time, that is an undue burden to some extent for me to be the person who's responsible in every academic situation I'm in to have to, for lack of a better word, educate my peers on the Black experience. Mm-hmm. Also, that sometimes requires an unpacking of trauma, too, that I find to be really unfair. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that wouldn't happen at an HBCU, in the fact that, for the most part, everyone, well, yeah, I mean, I actually, this is a sidebar, but I actually do not know how many, like, how many Black students are actually at an HBCU. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, so there's...
You mean percentage of, like, Black college students in the country, you mean?
No, I mean, like, so if you're looking at an HBCU, this may sound like a dumb question, but I have, like, a point. Like, how, like, large of a percentage of its students are Black students? I'm imagining, like, 95%, yeah, like, but, like, majority, so with that other percent, and then obviously if you just, like, a dynamic of most everyone understands Blackness, if not everyone, so then therefore you're not having that undue pressure of being the one to educate. But I imagine also that when you're at an HBCU, then in some ways you're still going to have to educate people on Blackness, because Blackness is not, and you've said it, like, Blackness is not one thing. So then you're still having to educate people on your experience. I just wonder if it would be less traumatic because there still is a base line of knowledge.
Yes. I think that's very true. And I think that what you were saying about, like, how there, since there isn't one experience of Blackness, I feel like that even complicates it even further in a way, because I think that if one person goes, and I think I see that especially at Georgetown, because, like, even though, so within the Black community, there are still people who have, like, tons of different stories, because, like, Blackness is only one identity that you hold, and there are tons that, like, contribute to you as a person, and I think that everyone's experience, like, vastly varies because of that. Like, even you and I, like, we're, like, we have different experiences, but we have, like, a commonality, like, people have shit in common, but, like, I think that even what we might say in a classroom may vary a lot.
Yeah.
As far as, like, our definitions or even our viewpoints, and I think that this assumption that often comes in predominantly white spaces in general, but especially in classroom settings, that, oh, if you are Black, that you should be speaking on certain issues, that is something that comes from there being a lack of understanding of the vastness that could come with Blackness in a way.
Yeah.
Like, because if you're talking about something like, oh, like, this is a really intense example. Like, this would be really wrong if this happened. But, like, if they were talking about, like, oh, like low-income high schools or some shit, like, in a class or something in a class, and everyone was, like, ooh, like, looking at you to, like, talk, or, like, looking at me or looking at some, the Black person in the room, it's, like, you don't know that, like, not every Black person has the same experience, and the fact is they don't. And I think that that's something that I've also realized a lot at Georgetown, and that, I don't know. It's interesting hearing, like, different people's stories, because I think coming into a PWI, I kind of had this idea that I would feel a sense of community with, like, everyone who's Black on this campus, but I've learned that that's not true, because there are other identities that contribute to you, and so I can feel like I have way more in common with someone else who isn't Black because we have a commonality in, like, say, class.
Yeah.
Or, like, because, yeah. Or just anything else.
No, that's true. And that's a really good perspective to talk some good stuff about PWIs. That is a good perspective that I feel like coming to Georgetown has given me. Because since I wasn't around any other Black students, then I was super hyped, even though I knew Georgetown had, like, no Black students. I was like, with the, like, five more that they have than I had at my high school, I'm going to, like, really bond. We're going to be pals. Like, I'm going to relate to every Black person on this campus. And, like, that hasn't proven to be true. And I think it was good in a lot of ways, because it proved to me that I could have friendships that were based on so much more than race, especially because coming into college, race was the most salient identity for me. And as college has gone on, that's, you know, changed, and there's been ebbs and flows, even though my Blackness is something that I hold dear to my heart and it always is with me and always something I'm aware of and think about. But not having something in common with every Black person I've met has really pushed me to, I think, realize the importance of other identities and be able to make relationships that are based off of them with others who may share that with me but may not have blackness in common, and see how powerful those relationships can be. So, wow, that's a good thing. Go Georgetown. Killing it.
Hoya sex.
Hoya sex. Hoya Blacksa! Wow, Lauren, the mental telepathy.
Ooh.
So good. Can we, like, instead of, we were thought about doing something like Black Twitter moment of the week, but can we do, like,
Black Us Twitter moment of the week? Just kidding.
I was going to say, like, best, like, an important Black person of the week.
Oh, we thought about that, too.
So if I were to pick a really important Black person of the week, I think it should be Roxane Gay.
Okay.
Because she's straight fire. She is a fantastic author, has written a bunch of different books, some of them fiction. I haven't read the fiction ones yet, but she wrote a really great series of essays entitled Bad Feminist and Hunger, and she also edited this year's, or 2018's collection of short stories. The main reason I bring her up is just because her Twitter is absolute fire. Like, my girl roasts people on the daily, and she's just meant a lot to me in this past week. So our wonderful producer, Kayla, had the really great suggestion that to end our beautiful podcast on a slightly lighter note, we should tell a story of an experience that we really have had here at a PWI that we would have not had at an HBCU. Lauren, you got any stories?
Wait, you go first.
Okay.
Mine is funny.
Anyway. Wait,
did I tell you the story about the guy who, like, came and sat with me at HFSC, but, like, was in a booth and, like, blatantly put his papers on top of mine?
No, go off.
No, it's not funny. That's not at all.
Wait,
no,
tell the story.
That's anger.
But mine's funny. So then we'll end on an actual lighter note, and I want to know the story.
Okay.
The listeners do too.
So basically, hello everyone. So essentially, what happened? I have a cute little story to tell. So I was sitting in the Healy Family Student Center, also known as HFSC, also known as HeFam Stusen, if you're me. Then, so I was sitting at, like, a table there. You know the little booths? Very intimate, yeah? So I'm, like, intently doing my work like a student. I am one of those. And so I, like, see someone, like, come plop. And obviously I think it's someone I know, so out of the corner of my eye, like, kind of, like, smiling almost, like, look up, because I'm expecting it to be someone I know, but it was a person I did not know. It was a random white man's. I refused to look at his face once I realized that. Once I realized I didn't know him. I was like, oh, like, if he thinks I'm moving my shit. Because the thing is, like, it wasn't even, like, I was, like, content in this, like, or not content. Like, I wasn't, like, in, like, a small area. Like, I had my shit, like, spread out, and he still felt like he should come sit, like, with me at the booth. And so he, like, blatantly put his papers, like, on top of mine and stuff. And I just, like, did not move. So I was in a standoff with this man for an hour. And I did my assignment because I had a deadline. Sis had a deadline. She had to keep it moving. And so I did that. And then eventually he left. And then I said goodbye and smiled at him. That was the first time I saw his face. I forgot what he looked like. Wasn't memorable. And... but I just wanted to tell him, if he's listening, which I hope to God he is... He needs this. I just am wondering, like, why me, you know?
Go off,
why me out of everyone?
That was wrong.
Anyway.
He probably knows that's wrong.
Honestly, took up too much space.
He did take up too much space.
Like, literal space.
Literal?
He was in my space.
It was gross.
That was my realm.
That was your realm. Because this is your world. He's just living in it.
You're laughing, you're smiling, but I'm serious.
No, why would I joke about that, Lauren?
I don't know why you would joke about this.
I
like,
would
this
not
is literally
joke.
My world.
It is your world. We're just living in it, and I'm happy to be living in it. Oh, that was a really angry story. And that man knows who he is, so watch out.
The crazy part is he probably doesn't. Like, that's the weird part about it. He probably doesn't even realize what he did. Or, like, he doesn't care what he did, rather. Anyway, keep going. Anyway, so to counteract my anger, we have
a fun story. So, of an experience that I had, particularly at this lovely PWI, that I would not be likely to have anywhere else, particularly at an HBCU. Last year, in the middle of the freshman messiness, I was at an event, and there was man's, and mind you, not a black man's, And he was like, "You're cute." And I was like, "Fantastic. That's the truth." And then he started to kiss me. And I was like, "Okay, this is happening." So we were making out for a while. And then in the middle, because we didn't really know each other. When I say didn't really know each other, like we did not know each other at all at the time. And he decided he wanted to get to know me better, which is fantastic. We all are for getting to know people. And he stops kissing me and asks me, "I want to get to know you better. Who is your favorite president?" Now, I just don't. There's so many.
Answer?
You know what my answer was.
Okay, valid.
Say it.
Obama.
Of course. What else am I going to say? Like, I'm in the middle of a very messy freshman night. Like, I'm not going to say, I don't know, like, Teddy Roosevelt, even though that was cool, because that's, like, what he did, Antiquities Act, yeah? And he set aside all the land for national parks. I think that's
this
correct.
This is an American Studies major.
We love Amstead.
I mean, I'm also a gov major, so I have no room to talk at all.
Okay, Keep going. Okay. We're fine. But I didn't have time for, like, or not just time. I didn't have the mental capacity to come up with some super eloquent answer. So I was going to go with the black girl answer, and that's Barack Obama. Okay, so please tell me why this man's, instead of, like, any other normal president, because then, of course, like, I can't just say my favorite president and then not ask him, like, what his was. That, I feel like that's very odd if I don't. So I asked him who his favorite president was. And I wish I could have you guys guess what this man's favorite president was. Time's up. So he... he said that Eisenhower was his favorite president. I like Ike, Dwight Eisenhower. Like, what? Whose favorite president is that? And then, so even though I was in a messy state, I still was able to ask, like, why? Because that's just not a normal president to me to say is your favorite president. Is that wrong? Am I passing too much judgment?
No, that's valid.
Exactly. See, thank you. And his only reasoning was because Dwight Eisenhower made the national highway system. And that was his reasoning. And that's the end of my story.
Yo said we needed highways. I mean, yo said I fucking love 95. Anyway.
About this is like, my man isn't even wrong. Like, the national highway system is a really important thing to add.
No, like, what would we do without it?
Exactly. It's super important.
What do they do without it?
Genuinely, I don't know. It's a super, super important invention that's been very crucial to American life. A fantastic answer. But, like, whose mind is there? That is not an experience that you would have at an HBCU. I really would die on that fact. And that's my story. And with that, thanks so much for listening to our first podcast of The Miseducation of Lauren and Mariah.
Make sure you follow The Voice on social media, and you can listen to more Voice podcasts on the podcast network as well as Apple Podcasts. And
we love you all. I hope you have really great days and live lives of fulfillment.
Okay, I'm Lauren.
I'm Mariah.
And you've been educated.